Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. Today I talk to Ward 5 City Councillor Leanne Caron, and the topic we talk about is very timely. The last council meeting of 2020 dealt heavily with the protection of heritage, including one particular case of the old Crawley farmhouse in the South End, a heritage conundrum that some people are desperate to save, but seems destined for a demolition order. Perhaps the recent fall of the Preston Springs Hotel in Cambridge over the holidays portends the fate of the Crawley farmhouse. Perhaps it portends the fate of other valuable heritage in Guelph as well. But one thing is certain. If we care about our heritage buildings and features, time is running out to save them. Fighting to protect cultural heritage is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. Let's be honest, heritage is a sensitive subject. While there may be a lot of love and nostalgia for an old building or neighborhood, it sometimes bristles against the practical realities of modern living. The Crawley Farmhouse is a great example, because its heritage value is obvious, and the need to preserve it is amply apparent, but it's in the middle of nowhere and it can't be connected to municipal water services. The property owner is stuck because they've testified that their attempts to sell the home or move it have all been stymied, and it's not like they haven't taken care of the house either, so they apparently appreciate the heritage value of the farmhouse as well. So now what? Demolition is an option of last resort, and if all other options have been exhausted, who is left to say, wait, stop, why can't we save this building? Now obviously there are no cabinet positions on City Council, but if Guelph did have a Minister of Heritage, it would be Leanne Caron. There's a lot of history in her ward, which contains what is presently Guelph's only heritage district. Her in-depth knowledge of Guelph history has been called upon many times to add context to various development and heritage debates, and it will likely be tested again next week as the Cultural Heritage Action Plan is discussed at Committee of the Whole. On the one hand, we have situations like the Crawley Farmhouse and the old drill hall on Farquhar Street, but we've also had great heritage preservation successes like the Petrie Building and the facade of the Gummer Building, which burned down in 2007. How can we have less of the former and more of the latter? That is one of the many questions we will put to Councillor Caron on this week's Guelph Politicast as we examine the issue of heritage, how far we can go to protect it, and what the limits are of that protection. Caron will talk about her own love of history, the heritage commitment of her community, and how that might date back to a lot of the demolitions downtown in the 1960s. We will also unravel the specific issues around the Crawley Farmhouse, our long history of short-sightedness on heritage, and why some heritage properties seem more of a priority than others. And finally, we will talk about her hopes for the Cultural Heritage Action Plan, how it might be able to resolve some of those heritage protection issues, and how she might have suspected that Heritage Guelph would reject the plan when she recommended to wait and discuss it back in council in October. So I caught up with Leanne Caron before the holiday break via Zoom. Leanne Caron, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Adam. Always happy. Always a pleasure to be here.
Well, I want to start with like maybe something easy to maybe set the table. You know, you the reason I wanted to talk to you especially about heritage was because you kind of set yourself up as maybe the Minister of Heritage for locally around the council table. It's a self-appointed position. But where does your love for protecting our cultural heritage come from?
That reputation has certainly grown out of my early political activism. It's certainly not the only thing that I care about. I care about the environment and the economy and all, you know, there's so many issues in Guelph other than heritage, but it's something that I've championed probably more than any other councillor because I have a degree in history. I used to work as a photographer of Architectural Heritage magazine. As well, I recognize that there's economic and environmental benefit to heritage conservation. It's not just about a pretty building. It's about what it says about our community and our respect for our ancestors and how we've developed as a city. I think architectural heritage is just it's a very large three-dimensional artifact that defines who we are. And it's not all about grand edifices and churches and city halls and the beautiful. It's also about the everyday, the farmsteads and the barns and the shoe shops. The working class heritage is just as important to me as the grand edifices of our city.
We're going to get to all that. I'm curious about the circumstances in sort of Guelph. I feel, and maybe you feel it too, Guelph has sort of a hyper awareness of its cultural heritage, of its historical, for lack of a better term, landmarks, the historical meaning behind a lot of things. I mean, those door open Guelph events are remarkably successful.
Thousands of people. Yeah.
I mean, just every year when we're able to go to places in person, of course, but is it your feeling too that maybe Guelph is very heritage aware, that perhaps it may be an above average way compared to other places, even in southern Ontario?
Absolutely. I have lived in different communities, and Guelph is unique in its relationship with its heritage. And I think that's because we have unique stories to tell, because heritage is often divided into kind of three different branches. There's the places, so, you know, an address, 1 Carden Street. Then there's the people who inhabited that. There's the stories of the people, and then there's the stories of the events that happened at that location. And it's really the stories that bring heritage to life. The buildings themselves are just a physical reminder of what story is to be told from that location. And we have a very unique beginning. In 1827, John Galt, how many other cities in Canada or North America were founded by novelists? And he was a unique individual who had a very unique view of what a settlement should be. And he also uniquely respected the first settlers. So yes, we are very Eurocentric when we talk about our heritage, and we need to get beyond the settlement narrative of Guelph being, I hate the word founded. It wasn't founded, it was already here. Mm. And Galt, at the founding site and the founding ceremony, or the chopping of the tree. When I talk about founding, I talk about the founding of the city of Guelph, the act of identifying the city location and putting a stake in the ground and saying, this is Guelph. But there's lots of pre-settlement narratives that go along with that, that he had Indigenous people at that ceremony. He had an Indigenous guide that you know, helped him to find to locate the place on the river. There's lots of stories along the way about how the streets were laid out. And I think because we have those stories to go along with our architecture, it puts Guelph in a very interesting place in Canadian history.
Mm-hmm. I want to fast forward a bit from John Galt to around the 1960s, because I come from Georgetown down the road. So I know there was a similar kind of thing in the 1960s where people kind of were more open, let's say just open to tearing down things. And if you go back into like the museum, has a ton of pictures from Guelph of, you know, the last 100 years. And you go back and you look at pictures from 1959, 1960, 1961, and you see what St. George's Square looked like. And you see pictures of the Carnegie Library, and you see pictures of of Quebec Street open, where the old Quebec Street mall sits today. I feel like this is like one of those like formative events. Like it feels like
heritage nerds in the 1960s were like standing on the street corners watching these buildings, these beautiful old buildings, get torn down, and thought to themselves, never again. And I feel like a lot of people in town are like these third, fourth generation kind of heritage activists that pass down this oral tradition of watching the beautiful old buildings get torn down. But I feel like, and maybe you can lend your insight into that, but the 60s is kind of where that began, right? We're still feeling the psychic wounds of that beautiful Carnegie Library not being there anymore, right?
Yes, absolutely. I hear that all the time. Now, I wasn't there. That came before my time. So, but I've seen the pictures and I still have that same lament. And I guess for me, it's the buildings and the stories that they tell. So the architects, the builders, the activities that happened in those buildings had a place in our history and our growth and our development and our culture. And when the buildings go, the stories go, and the association with those stories go. But you're absolutely right that in the 60s, it was still very post-war. The baby boomers were in control and they wanted brand spanking new. They wanted to erase the past, the Victorian stuffiness and the wartime memory of European architecture. They wanted shiny, they wanted modern. And so that cultural wave across North America did a lot of damage to our cultural heritage inventory. Guelph did better than most in terms of buildings that were saved, but we still lost a lot.
Mm-hmm. Looking to the idea of saving and losing, I know that we have issues with, you know, a lot of different buildings around that have been allowed to. Demolition by neglect is a term, if you're not familiar with it, we've certainly heard a lot in the last couple of weeks. I wonder, though, in terms of like trying to resolve this, I'm thinking about buildings like the Petrie Building, mm-hmm. which is like this building, which is between other buildings. There was certainly neglect in that building, but it was able to be reclamated. We were able to get more attention to reclimate it because it's right there on the main street. And it's easier to sort of look at and say, we need to save that as opposed to a farmhouse that's like in the middle of nowhere down in the South End. Something like the Gummer Building too, if it burned down and if it was like its own kind of separate structure, I think there certainly would have been outrage about just razzing the rest of it, but because it's in the core, it's downtown, there was a heroic effort to save what was left of it. So I guess because of that, do we have a habit of like thinking about saving heritage things differently? Like if we can see it, there will be more of an effort to rescue it because it's sort of in our collective memory. Maybe we walk past it every day. Something like the Drill Hall, for example, you know, that will probably be something that'll be easier to save than say the Crawley Farmhouse, which is down in a road nobody drives down in the middle of an industrial area. I guess how do we bridge that?
Well, that's an excellent question, because our visceral and emotional attachment to heritage is very much tied to our interaction and our experience with it. So the Petrie Building, for anyone who goes downtown, you know exactly where it is and you look up and you go, oh, that's cool. And you see it every day. And so there is definitely an attachment to that experience. If you don't know a building or it is out of the main street, you're less likely to have a personal relationship with it. The Gummer Building, people felt so strongly about it because it held memories. Again, those stories. There was artist studios. It had doubled for movie sets. It was beautiful. It was viscerally and aesthetically something that people associate with their walk down Douglas Street. So, yeah, the more that the more that a building participates or is actively part of a person's life, the more likely they are to want to save it. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, That's why I believe that it's important that those stories get told, because the reason no one knows the Crawley farmhouse is because that story's not out there. Mm. You know, the Crawleys were a prominent agricultural family. They did research on their farm tied to the University of Guelph. The Crawley Road is the Crawley family goes back, you know, to the 1860s. So if you've never heard their story, you're not going to feel any affiliation for maintaining that heritage.
Mm-hmm. Here's the tricky part, because we're recording this on December 15th. There was a meeting dedicated in part to designating the Crawley farmhouse last night on the 14th. And I don't know the entire history of the file, but from the way the lawyer for the property owner explained it, there has been significant efforts to try and find a way to save the house, whether to use it in some way, get it serviced, or have somebody else move it. And I mean, I guess, where is the limit to saving a property like the Crawley farmhouse if a property owner... And again, I don't know the entire file, and with a healthy skepticism about a property owner that wants to do something with their property and maybe trying to justify it. But if they are in earnest and have tried for years to literally find a way to save this farmhouse, and just there are no takers, at what point do we absolve ourselves of trying to save a piece of history that apparently no one's interested in saving, except for maybe people like you who are history fanatics?
Yeah, and you know what? I wouldn't call myself a fanatic. I guess I'm seeing it through a lens that it's to benefit of future generations. But you're absolutely right that adaptive reuse is key to heritage conservation. A building without a purpose or a future purpose is doomed. And it's either doomed circumstantially because it sits there and demolition by neglect happens simply because of the absence of purpose, or it's willful neglect in that you don't maintain and you don't steward it and you intend to remove it and you allow it to neglect to make it easier to get the demolition permit. Right. So there's willful and there's circumstantial. But in both cases, a building without a future purpose is going to be doomed. So what we need to do better is make those future adaptive reuse possibilities and opportunities possible. So the drill hall is a good example. There are those who look at the drill hall and go, it's just a big old wooden building. We could do something so much better if we demolished it and built something bigger and shinier. But when you talk about when you open your mind to adaptive reuse, that the superstructure of that building is actually like a timber frame barn. You could create artist studios and an art space or learning space or community space. There's so many possibilities when you have an open mind and an open structure. A lot of heritage is perfect for adaptive reuse because the structure itself is so sound. The foundations and the walls and the ability to repurpose over and over and over again, it can become a house, it can become a church, it can become a community center, it can become a commercial space with a cafe. When you start thinking about the possibilities, then you think, oh, that's heritage buildings are ideal for that kind of creative opportunity, pie in the skying. Right. When you put roadblocks like a septic system, you remember the conversation last night is you can't put septic in there and you can't get residential zoning and you can't do this and you can't do that. Well, those are rules that human beings made. Those are rules that we as a city or the province put on this land. They're not infallible rules. They're not rules that can't be changed, and they're not rules that don't have exceptions. So we need to enable better the potential for adaptive reuse. So I recall when that building was boarded up, I had the privilege of touring that particular farmhouse when there was still an indoor pool. The pool was removed when the barn was still on the land, and it was a habitable house that was being temporarily boarded up until its future use could be realized. And the talk then was everything from a daycare center to a restaurant to a B&B to a professional development center or office space. Those possibilities are all still there. And if the artificial barrier is that we have local rules that say you can't put a septic tank, then let's talk about the rules.
Right. And I think where I got stuck sort of watching that debate was like, where have we gone wrong, I guess, in terms of the reaction of the landowner was, and, you know, when you look at the pictures from inside the house, it was well taken care of. It seemed to be that there was some genuine care and affection for the house on the part of the property owner.
Absolutely.
So they seem to have hit a wall. On the other hand, it seemed to me that they had to bring forth a demolition request to sort of make some of these ideas come to the fore, which seems kind of like an extremist reaction. And I guess, you know, what steps are we missing in between? Like, if the goal is to protect the cultural heritage assets like this farmhouse that are maybe out of sight, out of mind, why does it take a demolition order to sort of to get action, even not even just on a council level, but like on a heritage Guelph level, even, which is kind of their gig, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And those questions are all brought to light last night, and I think that's what we're trying to solve now. Is that why did it take a demolition permit? These things could have been avoided, and so we have a policy gap. We have a policy gap on a number of fronts. The number one is designation. Should we be designating earlier in the process? Because what designation could do is it could allow for tax relief, heritage incentive grants. Most municipalities have a heritage granting policy that allows a portion of the property tax to be granted back to an owner for retention and stewardship of the heritage attributes. We need to talk, that's a policy direction that we need to talk more about as a city. And if there's other infrastructure and zoning that, if we're the wall, if the city is the wall that's preventing heritage conservation, and we're also the authority that is saying we value and we want heritage conservation, then we're talking out both sides of our mouths. We can't be the wall and the conduit. We have to be more proactive in working with property owners to make sure that we can achieve mutual goals. There's an economic benefit. We know that. There's so much research about the economic benefit of heritage conservation to a city and to the property owners. So we need to do a better job of telling that story to property owners. Like, hey, you retain this building. There's actually a net benefit to you and to the city to doing so, and we'll share in that prosperity. So yeah, we have a lot of work cut out for us to get this file back in order. But I'm hopeful that we can do that, because I don't want to, and I want to be truthful here in that there's been a lot of players along the way, and this file, the heritage file, has gone from department to department. This, you know, it's gone from real estate to planning to finance to engineering, and the players have changed along the way. So it's nobody's fault. It's no individual person's fault. It's no department's fault. It's a circumstance that has been brought to light, and now it's time to put all of the ducks in a row to make sure that we are stewarding our heritage responsibly. I think we owe it to the citizens of Guelph to get our ducks in order.
Well, that may be a good place to bring in the Cultural Heritage Action Plan, which I know is going to be coming up at committee in January. or I guess next week by the time this airs. I want to accuse you of playing politics for a minute because
who, me?
Yeah, because this did go to the Heritage Guelph meeting last week. They voted unanimously to reject it. And I know you brought forward the motion in October that asked for cultural heritage's feed or for Heritage Guelph's feedback before this came to committee. So did you have a feeling that the plan as it stands would be rejected by Heritage Guelph when you made that motion?
I didn't know for sure. In fact, what I felt and what I was hoping are two different things. I felt if the plan as is went back to committee, that they would raise significant concerns. I was hoping that their input in that conversation, and still hoping that might alter the plan, that we might see a slightly modified plan come back that speaks to the concerns that they raised. And if I remember correctly, the concerns were that it fails to adequately reflect pre-settlement heritage, indigenous heritage. Mm-hmm. And I would share that concern. One of the other concerns was that the public consultation during COVID and the method of consultation left out certain constituencies, certain stakeholders. And that I think the third big one was that the prioritization of what should come first in terms of what should be designated first, what kind of cultural heritage landscapes rise to the top of the priority list, was flawed in that the number one criteria seemed to be which one was most at risk for insensitive development, and that there are other criteria that were equally as important that weren't used. So there were now there's lots of good stuff in the Cultural Heritage Action Plan too, and mm-hmm. and I don't want to lose all the good stuff but not address the things that we could be doing better. Mm-hmm. We do need, what I worry about moving forward is we need a good solid cultural heritage action plan in this city. We need to move forward on our heritage agenda, and this action plan was supposed to get us there. Mm-hmm. And I still have hope that that we can salvage all of those good things.
And being an outside observer, what I would ask though is, you have a lot of people who are very passionate about cultural heritage. Four people took part in that meeting as delegates, the Heritage Guelph meeting as delegates, deeply concerned about the things that you outlined, and those were the things that Heritage Guelph ended up agreeing that these were concerning things. I wonder if this is like kind of like a perfect storm of things going on in terms of city policy, because you have the desperate need to have an action plan, because it's, as you said, it's something that's gone from department to department to department. So we're trying to organize it quickly. We're trying to organize it in a pandemic. We're trying to balance all these concerns, not necessarily the same concerns as people in the community who are deeply concerned about cultural heritage. I guess, are we trying to run before we can crawl, I guess, is one of the things I'm getting at.
Yeah, and I think part of that that angst in the community about what does this mean and how much money are we going to put towards it is, heritage is something that's really hard to define because it's very personal. Mm. And it's seen by many as a frill. It's frivolous. It's not a core to our city. So if it snows and your road doesn't get plowed, you're going to notice. If you put your garbage out and it's not picked up, you're going to notice. If there's a pothole, you're going to notice. There are core services, and heritage is not seen as a core service until it's gone. Mm. All of a sudden, a building that or a structure or a landscape is gone, and the outrage is incredible. The outrage is 10 times the outrage of I didn't get my garbage picked up, because it's forever. Mm-hmm. And when something is lost, that can never, ever be reclaimed or fixed or repaired or rebuilt. The loss is profound. And it's not something that most of us have on our watch because we assume someone's looking after it. The city's got our back. The city won't let that be demolished. The city won't let that happen. And then all of a sudden it happens. Mm. And we need to make sure that our residents know that, yeah, we're on it. We've got an action plan. We have a designation plan. We have resources to fund this plan. And that it's not frivolous in the city's agenda. That's kind of a long-winded answer to.
Well, it is a problem of scale, right? Because, yeah. and you mentioned this at the meeting last night, that the Crawley Farmhouse is kind of like one of the last examples of this agricultural heritage, that there, the South End, where the area of land
disappeared. It's gone.
Yeah, it wasn't like it happened last year. It's like this farmhouse, because this person brought a demolition permit, or because of this plan for this area, this farmhouse is gone. And then a couple of years later, this barn is gone. And very slowly, the field moves, and mm-hmm. until it's just the one example left. And because certain choices have been made, it's always been said, like, well, we can let that go because we still have this farmhouse as an example, and we can let that stand. But now it's caught up to that farmhouse. Yeah. And now it's on the brink. And it's just, it's like an example of just how maybe short-sighted we can be around the local government table, that, you know, we're so busy trying to solve those potholes, those garbage issues, that, you know, we can slowly watch things happen that wasn't the intent, but then here we are at the end, the very end. And
yeah, and those were conscious sacrifices. So we knew that some of these cultural heritage buildings had to go. They were in the way of development, and there was a very conscious decision of, like, let's identify the 20 farmhouses, the 20 resources that we have. So some of them were barns or other buildings, and let's pick one or two, the best of the best, and let's save those. And there was an acceptance of that. So those incremental demolitions over the course of 30 years were intentional. And you're right, then you get to the end and it's like, oh, there's only one left. Well, if we've lost all of our heritage, then what's the point of saving this one? So we've done that before, and we haven't learned our lesson. The downtown was dotted with 20 different livery stables at one time, and they've gradually disappeared one by one by one by one. There's still one left on Douglas Street. There's a beautiful livery stable with an arch door that was once the Pioneer Furniture. I don't know what's in there right now. I think it's offices, but the Sprague livery is still there. And we say, okay, we saved one. We pat ourselves on the back and we saved one. And that one livery stable can now tell the entire library of stories about a time when everyone had a horse. And you brought your horse downtown and you had to put it in a livery stable if you wanted to shop or go to market. And they were kind of like the parking lots of the parking garages of the 1800s.
I was just thinking that, yeah.
Yeah. And so we're at that point with Willow Grove, where if we don't save one representative, are we losing all the stories? Because all of those agricultural stories, all of those families, the Lairds, the Phelans, the McWilliams, the Eustaces, the Crawleys, the Lesters, all of those stories are in this one remaining farmhouse. The question is the incremental loss as significant as the one? And I'm not sure I have an answer to that question. I guess I feel like Willow Grove is all of those stories wrapped into one building. And yes, if we lose this last one, then the other 20 fall with it.
Mm.
And if this final farmhouse falls, it's a collective shame on all of us, not just city council and not the property owner. It's under our collective watch as a community that we let it happen.
Mm-hmm. Maybe to wrap up, I will offer a philosophical question, and it, you know, maybe this speaks to my inner cynic, but I mean,
your
I like
inner cynic. You, Adam?
I know, but
I've read your columns.
It's a tight trace on cynicism. But no, I like heritage too. I like looking at those old pictures. I like going into those old buildings. But at the end of the day, I guess, where is the fine line between protecting heritage and just hoarding? And I don't mean that to be a pejorative, but you know, if this was like newspapers I was collecting in my house instead of like buildings we're trying to protect around town, we would call it hoarding. You know, it may not be June 1997 today, but if I have every issue of the Toronto Star from June 1997, I might be able to find something that ties back to December 2020. So in the case of buildings, though, perhaps just, you know, in a pessimistic way, we can't save everything. But, you know, where when people do confront you with ideas about like what is progress, what, you know, when is enough enough in terms of trying to save every last building we can, is there a fine line between being a steward of good cultural heritage and just hoarding things because they're old?
Okay, so take a walk with me, Adam, to the Louvre in Paris.
Okay.
You're walking through the Louvre or the AGO, the Art Gallery of Ontario, and you're looking at all the beautiful paintings, the pieces of art. If you had to get rid of 9 out of every 10, which ones would you choose?
I don't know, but I would also argue that we can store paintings easier than we can move houses.
Point taken. There are many of us heritage nerds, but I also think universally that architecture is big 3D art. That the designer, the builder, the tradesman, the craftsman, the stone, the quarryman, the carpenters, the millwork, the work and the embodied energy and artistry that went into creating that structure is art. And when those families or when those builders, not just farmhouses, but buildings downtown, when those were built, those builders, those architects, they thought when they were building it, this building will last hundreds and hundreds of years. And in Europe, they do. They restore. There are 13th century guild halls still standing, wattle and daub barns from the 1200s that are still standing because they stewarded them and they maintained active use. And they understood that conservation is more than just about the aesthetic. And that is something that we're missing here. We assume that demolish, rebuild, demolish, rebuild, demolish, rebuild, and that what you rebuild is somehow going to be better than what was once there. But the truth is that those buildings were built to last. They were built to withstand climate change, to withstand hurricanes, to withstand time. And what they weren't built to withstand was human
progress.
Human progress, human belief that what they're doing is progress, because progress is not always demolition. Sometimes progress is conservation.
Mm-hmm. It's as much a messaging problem as a practical problem. Maybe.
Bingo. Yeah.
Okay. Cynicism aside, I do appreciate the hard work and I do appreciate the passion that people like you and our community have for standing for those old buildings. I wish that maybe there were easier solutions, I guess.
We share that wish.
Yeah, good. Okay. I like to end on agreement. But Leanne Caron, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
And once again, that was Leanne Caron. Council will be taking up the matter of the Cultural Heritage Action Plan at this Monday's Committee of the Whole meeting. You can read the coverage of last month's Heritage Guelph meeting on Guelph Politico, and then you can head over to Guelph Politico on Monday to follow live coverage of the meeting. And that's it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The Guelph Politicast is usually recorded at CFRU at the University Center on the University of Guelph campus. And to learn more about CFRU, go to cfru.ca. You can download the Guelph Politicast on Wednesday from Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. You can get it from the host Podbean at guelphpoliticast.podbean.com. And when you subscribe to the Guelph Politicast channel, you will get an episode of Open Sources Guelph on Mondays and an episode of End Credits on Fridays. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson or at Guelph Politico. Check out Guelph Politico on Facebook at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you'd like to help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating to Guelph Politico. And you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. And thank you to everyone who added their funds to the great Guelph Politico bank account over the holiday break. It is very much appreciated. And for all the latest local political news going forward into the year 2021, please check out guelphpolitico.ca, where there will be a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you next week. And until then, we will see you next time.